We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Ooh. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
2 seconds. Middleton. Yes! Chris Middleton.
Back jumper. Got it!
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Hey there. Welcome to Binge the Bucks, a special narrative podcast series focusing on the Milwaukee Bucks 2019 playoff run, part of the Eurostep podcast. I'm Ty Windisch, and I'm here with Rohan Kadi and our first Binge the Bucks special guest to break down Game 3 in the first series in the Bucks 2019 playoff run. This is a 119-103 victory over the Detroit Pistons. This podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag, and the Eurostep is proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This was the closest game of the series. The Bucks won by just 16. It was also Blake Griffin's triumphant return to honor Detroit, who did sort of try valiantly in this series. We've got Lazarus Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys and Pistons versus everybody. Laz, how's it going?
I'm great. It's good to be on the podcast. It sucks that we got to talk about something that's so painful to me, but we can still power through it.
And Rohan is here as well. Rohan, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing all right. I think last time when we talked about games 1 and 2, I might have gone a little too in on the Pistons.
I'm curious to see if a Pistons representative in Laz is going to maybe have you slow down a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Maybe I'll have to cut it back a little bit.
Without further ado, I think we might as well just jump into this thing. I believe, Rohan, you have a sort of primer to set the stage for this game.
Yeah, it's mostly about Blake. Like you said, like Blake was having an all NBA season and he's coming back. He's doing it for Detroit because he was hurt. He was come back and he was on like half a knee, if he even had any knees left. When he came back and started playing in this game, you could see he was just in so much pain and so much discomfort, but he was still powering through it for the team, for the city, who was having their first home playoff game in like 2 seasons. I think. It was very exciting time for Detroit because this was the game where they needed to win if they wanted to have a chance in the series. Because if you're down 2-0 and then you get on 3-0, it's over.
Yeah, so this is the first thing I wanted to ask you about, Laz. I mean, obviously, the Bucks up 2-0, it's a 1-8 series. Bucks pretty overwhelming favorites. I mean, winning both the home games only cements that further. But Blake coming back, you know, from my... obviously not a Pistons fan perspective, but just general NBA watcher. It did seem maybe unnecessary, maybe a little risky. It also did seem like kind of a cool thing for the Pistons to have, you know, their guy, their new franchise player, fight through injuries to play in these playoff games. from that perspective, it does seem cool. Looking back on this, what were you feeling on the rewatch and originally when this series happened about Blake returning for this game?
Oh, man. Originally, so I was actually in Detroit for Game 3, and I went to the game. And so I was there. They had like a Pistons Twitter meetup thing, so we did that before the game. Met a bunch of people I had like only seen through their Twitter avatar, so that was really cool. But we didn't know if Blake was going to play until he was like announced in the starting lineup.
Oh wow!
And so when he was announced, like that was the loudest I had ever heard like LCA ever be. And I've been there for, I was there on the opening night when the first regular season game. I was there for the first playoff game. Like that was legitimately like the most engaged crowd in Detroit like I've heard in quite some time. So that was really exciting. So it did mean a lot for like the team and the city for Blake to even like suit up and play. And, you know, obviously it hasn't worked out. Like the injury continued to linger into this season, curtailed the, you know, 2019-2020 season. We'll see what he looks like next season whenever that occurs. But you know, for those two games, like for that one moment, it really did mean a lot to the team and the city. Unfortunately, you know, it meant a lot to Dwayne Casey as well, and he was using Blake like Blake was fully healthy, and he very clearly wasn't. You know, I was rewatching the game today, or you know, like bits and pieces of it, and it was astonishing to me how many times like Casey had Blake covering Giannis. Like, no, like don't do that. Like, that's a terrible idea. Why would you do that? And so many times when, you know, even Blake at, you know, 60% or whatever was still, you know, the only good thing the Pistons had going for them on offense. You know, he put up 27, 7-6, but like he did it on 24 shots, and he was the only player on the team to shoot 20 plus times, right? Like they were using him like he was, you know, all pro NBA, you know, game 35 Blake, not like 1.5 knees Blake.
Yeah. To be fair to Blake in the situation, I didn't realize that he had taken 24 shots until you said that right then. Because it just felt like he was being used as like his normal number one option sort of thing, because that's what Detroit needed, because in the first two games they got smoked. And then when you have your all NBA player returning, you're kind of like, help, please.
No, you're right. But, you know, there was a lot of diminishing returns, right? Like he was very clearly like way worse in the second half than he was in the first half. There were a couple of moments where he's still like out there, like diving for loose balls where you're like gritting your teeth and wincing and like hoping if he, you know, you don't even know if he's going to like get up off the floor. But, you know, Luke Kennard had a really effective series up to that point. But you had hoped that like between him and like looking really spry Reggie Jackson, you'd be able to take off like some of the offensive load from Blake and just kind of let him don't force everything on him. But no, like they did what they had done the entire season. They, you know, posted up Blake on the left block, surrounded him with shooters, and kind of just waited. And, you know, it was about as effective as it was going to be against a Milwaukee team that was as good defensively as that one was.
I think one of my favorite Blake Griffin things to like kind of think about and look at is he was really limited, limited might be a bad word, but like he was on a Chris Paul offense for such a long time. And obviously if you're on a Chris Paul team, it's a Chris Paul offense. Like Chris Paul is doing everything and you're kind of just fitting into spaces around Chris Paul. And like the only times Blake would actually get to really create, it felt like, were when CP was out when he was a Clipper. And it just seems so funny to me that Blake gets his own team and immediately, and obviously, you know, Dwayne Casey and everybody else plays a role in this, but basically just becomes Chris Paul on the low block. Like the offense is just, it went from when he was a Clipper, he had to sit there and watch Chris Paul so much. Blake now as a Piston was like, you know what? I want to have the ball every single time. Let me try doing this for a little while. I've always thought that was like a funny little, I don't know what the right expression is, like, you know, what goes around comes around. That doesn't work. There's a better expression. There's a better way to put it in words. But that's just always something. And it, like you guys have talked about, his high usage and everything in this game, as necessary as it was, that will always be a little fun in me. He kind of went from not being able to do anything to being the guy who doesn't let Luke Kennard or whoever else do anything.
Yeah, and like that's something that was kind of like a undercurrent throughout the entire season, right? It was like Luke Kennard is a guy who is more effective with the ball in his hands, but if he has the ball, Blake doesn't, and you would rather have Blake have the ball. Mm-hmm. But you know, those two guys just never really found a way to work in tandem. You know, Luke only shot 9 times, had 9 points after averaging like 20 points for the first 2 playoff games. He only had 1 3-point attempt, which was crazy to me. Just like even just staring at the box score, since you know if you're surrounding Blake with shooters, you would expect like Luke to be one of the more like deadly spot up guys around that, and that just didn't happen. And but the other thing was, right, like after the first 2 games, the Bucks started taking Luke seriously as an offensive threat, and so they really did a good job of taking him out of the game. Sterling Brown started on him. If I remember correctly, like Pat Connaughton was doing an amazing job of just like hounding him off ball and getting him, not letting him like get to his spots. He was killing the Bucks from like the mid range, getting into like his little elbow jumper, and Pat wasn't having any of that. And so, yeah, it's just like if you didn't have Blake at 100% and you didn't have the guy who had been going off in the series playing well, like it was going to be an uphill battle.
It was, but despite all that going for the Bucks, and we'll go to the quarter by quarter here, Detroit still starts off pretty well. This is something I did not remember, but looking back, like you said, Little Caesars Arena was hype. The Pistons start out first up 5-0, then up 7-0. The guy who kept the Bucks in this thing, and eventually Milwaukee does end the quarter with a pretty solid 8-point lead, Eric Bledsoe was good for sure. Chris Middleton hit at least a 3. Ersan Ilyasova leads the game in scoring in the first quarter. Ersan with 9 first quarter points going off. I look back at this. I don't know if Rohan or maybe Laz, you guys remember this better than me. I did not remember Ersan, of all people, being the guy to kind of stabilize the Bucks and make sure they were winning. But if you take away Ersan's scoring, the Pistons won the first quarter. Ersan was the difference. This felt like a fever dream, and looking back, like, it kind of all connected. I was like, oh, that's right. But this was not something before rewatching that I would have looked back and been like, oh, yeah, that was the Ersan quarter that kept the Bucks in that one.
I think we've sort of forgotten that Ersan like used to be a capable 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
You know, just everything prior to the season. Like, he hit 3 threes in that quarter. He has hit 3 threes in a game exactly 1 time. Ooh. Since then.
Do you know when it was?
December 28th against Orlando, where he started for Giannis.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Wow. So, yeah, the Ersan first quarter. But still, like, I feel like this wasn't a terrible quarter for Detroit. I mean, the Pistons were going on runs. They had a lead with about 4 minutes left in the first quarter before Chris swished a 3. Chris swished is not a two-word pairing I should put together anymore. But this, like, wasn't a bad first quarter for Detroit. They couldn't hold the lead. The Bucks were just a little bit too good. But it was interesting to see the Pistons, you know, they were in this game, I think, kind of throughout, but definitely in this first quarter.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson and Wayne Ellington hitting like 2 threes apiece in the quarter was huge. All of them were so difficult shots, and they felt like just backbreakers for the Bucks, even though they were like still had a lead, but it still felt like, oh, it's going to be this sort of game.
Yeah, the thing when you guys said Ersan, you know, had a big quarter, the thing I remember was just like how bad Andre Drummond was in this quarter for Detroit. This is like kind of the story of Andre Drummond, right? Like when he's trying too hard to have too big of an impact on the game, it makes him a less effective player. And, you know, you look at the first quarter, he was getting everything blocked by Brook Lopez, missing tip backs, not getting out on guys like Ersan and Brook Lopez. Lopez also had a couple threes, I think, this quarter. And so, yeah, it's just like when I think about Ersan, you know, making shots, I think about like Andre getting the hand up too late and no one being available inside to get the rebound anyway. So it didn't matter. But yeah, but you know, the shooting of Ellington and Jackson was kind of the thing you hope to lean on to keep pace, and you know, it kind of didn't happen.
This was a hard series for Andre Drummond. This might have been four of the worst Andre Drummond games he's ever had since Greg Monroe left Detroit. Shout out to Greg Monroe.
It's a hard matchup.
Yeah, it is. It's really, really hard.
Because we talked about this like sort of in like the game one, game two episodes. It's sort of hard to be a physical presence against Milwaukee, against Brook Lopez and Giannis. Like it's you can't win that battle.
Yeah, and he makes his living, you know, his idealized version is like making his living in the pick and roll at the rim. But if the Bucks are just, if you got Brook Lopez dropping and seeding all these floaters and these paint runners, there's no opportunity for him to make an impact on the offensive glass because, you know, they're walling off the paint and everything. And there's not a lot of opportunity to get him the ball in the pick and roll because, you know, Brook Lopez is one of the best paint defenders in the league. And so it just, he was very frustrated that he could not make an impact offensively. And then defensively, you know, you're asking him cover a lot of ground. You're asking him to, you know, close out on shooters. You're asking him to stay, to venture out of the paint and outside of the rebounding area, which is what he likes to be in. And so it's just like, yeah, it's just a really, really difficult matchup for Andre Drummond.
Yeah. And, I would not. Oh, no, go ahead, Ron.
No, it's just, this was the start of what was going to be like a very bad game for Giannis, because he did not score. He only took two shots, and one of them was a three. Like, he just wasn't getting anything going, and it was just indicative of what sort of game it was going to be.
Yeah, that is a good teaser. We will get back to Giannis's struggles, his worst game of his worst game of the postseason, definitely his worst game of the series without looking too hard at it. But first, folks, with currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on outside of whatever playoff run we will do next for Binge the Bucks. You can't really bet on that right now. Maybe you could quietly, but even in addition to that, you'd be wrong. There are other things to bet on. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline.ag, still has hundreds of sports, events, and games to wager on. And you can also let them bring Vegas to you with their online casino and blackjack, all open 24 hours a day, all completely online, including their $750,000 poker series. If you're into props and entertainment betting, you can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even the weather. Visit their website and join today to receive a 100% welcome bonus with your first deposit. No longer a 50% bonus, a 100% welcome bonus. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE. That's all one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline.com, your online wagering experts. All right, let's get to the second quarter. As you mentioned earlier, Rohan, Giannis did not have a good game. The word I used was flummoxed. His line, 14 points, 10 rebounds, 5 for 13 shooting, 4 turnovers, so only one more made field goal than turnovers, 5 fouls. Does anyone want to guess who drew the most fouls on Giannis? I feel like it's pretty apparent from the feelings these two players have for each other, even now.
Was it Ish Smith?
It was not Ish Smith. It was not Ish Smith. It was Blake Griffin. Blake drew 3 of the 5 fouls. The other two were one from Reggie Jackson, one from Andre Drummond. And looking back at this, I tweeted about this earlier today as we record this on Saturday. No love lost between Blake Griffin and Giannis. Obviously, Blake steps over Giannis this past season, whatever, which gets Chris Middleton pretty upset, which is one of my all-time favorite Chris Giannis moments, honestly. It's just, Chris is like waving the hand, like he's really making some great points to the whole Pistons team, and just love to see guys stepping up for each other after a step over each other. But back to this game, Blake did a good job on Giannis. Blake did a really good job on Giannis. He got Giannis pissed off, which would not go as well for his team in game 4 of this series, but he did well. He drew fouls. It was kind of reminiscent of the way Al Horford defended Giannis the year before, just like, be very solid, make Giannis be too aggressive, make Giannis make mistakes. And for the most part, it worked. And that was kind of a theme throughout this game, second quarter and the rest of it too.
Yeah, I think that it really just points to Giannis's evolution year over year, that, you know, the way that Blake was playing him was like, you know, stand beneath the free throw line and wait. And that's something that you can no longer do with him anymore. And you can really just see how he internalized like the lessons of that entire playoff run into his game this year and just became a better player. But yeah, like, you know, Blake was on him at times. They started the quarter with Blake on him. Andre came in. They employed the same defensive strategy. Andre did a not bad job of staying in front of Giannis. But yeah, that doesn't. But you know, when the Bucks still were playing five out, or you know, four in, four out, one in, with Giannis being the one, Giannis being the driver, you know, and still having trouble like getting out to shooters and having guys like, you know, Ersan and Eric Bledsoe like knocking down shots, and Mirotić hit a couple shots, you're still losing that mathematics battle, you know. And so despite the fact that, you know, Blake was able to maybe bait Giannis into a couple turnovers and you know, hold him to a limited number of shot attempts, you know, obviously the Bucks were still finding success offensively.
It seemed like it was just, yeah, like you were saying, he was just throwing Giannis off a little bit. And it's fun to see these two go at each other, because it seems like Blake takes Giannis sort of personally, because he sort of reminds him of his younger self, maybe.
Ooh, wow, psychologist Rohan in the booth right now, dropping some takes.
Because it's like, what is the perception of Giannis? I'm not going to say it's just actual Giannis in his game. It's just like an athletic guy who's just
No moves.
He's got no skill. You know, he just runs and dunks the ball because he's 7 feet tall. but that's like all of Blake Griffin's like highlights from his like Clipper days are just like based on his athleticism. So he's just seeing Giannis come on the scene. It's like, no, this used to be me. I'm going to take this matchup personally and sort of get in his head a little bit. Because it seems like, admittedly, I didn't watch like Blake on the Pistons as much as I do Giannis on the Bucks. But it seems like Blake really took this matchup more seriously than any other one.
Yeah, Blake was really trying very hard to like be a leader and be a very important part of this team. And part of being a leader and part of being like an all NBA guy is going at the other team's best guys. And, you know, despite his limited, you know, physical ability, you can kind of tell that there's no love lost between those two guys. I don't know if the, like the pop psychology thing of like, he reminds me of me when I was younger. It's like, if only he had a Chris Paul to screw up his earlier career, we'd be straight. But I don't know about that. But yeah, you can definitely tell that Blake tries to take it to star guys just to prove a point.
Yeah,
I remember being frustrated in the moment at the way Blake played these games. Not from just from strictly from the Bucks homers perspective. Like, man, this Blake is being kind of annoying in this series. Like, he's getting on everybody's nerves a little bit. But looking back, my one note about Blake from this quarter was simply Blake carried himself like he was the baddest MF-er in the world. And he really did. Like, he came back, like, the way he was, like, strutting, the way he was complaining about calls. Like, he's slamming balls down before he inbounds after the Bucks make a shot. Like, he was really in this thing. And I remember it, like, briefly from back then. Looking back, it hits me pretty powerfully. Like, good for Blake for really being, like, fired up, really trying. I think the Pistons as a whole, and it doesn't help that they just got, you know, absolutely rocked the first two games, of course. Like, there's a limit to how hard anyone will compete. But, like, the fact that they did get rocked like that, Blake saw those games, Blake knew what the stakes was, everything else. He was still out there trying this damn hard. I feel like that's something Detroit really needed in this series. And honestly, good for him. Like, I applaud him for really, like, he wanted this thing. Like you said, Laz, like, he wanted this damn series. He wanted to be the guy in Detroit. Not everyone wants to be the guy in Detroit. Not everyone, you know, before these days wanted to be the guy in Milwaukee, etc. So it's always nice to see, you know, a legit superstar, a very famous person. He's got Kia commercials. He tells sort of funny jokes, everything else. He really wanted to be the guy in Detroit in this circumstance. It was cool to watch, as frustrating as it also might be.
No, I mean, like, and you can tell, like, when he left the game at, like, the 9-minute mark, like, I'm staring at the like the play-by-play, and there's just like a long stretch where like nothing happens offensively, And like that, that enables to let the Bucks kind of, it was a 1-point game with, you know, 8 minutes to go in the quarter. And then the lead just kind of grows and grows and grows. And then Blake comes back and then some stuff happens. But yeah, like he wanted it really badly, but there was nobody else who was able to like step up and support him in that. And like that was really the story of like the last year's Pistons, you know, the inability of the team collectively sometimes to get behind Blake.
Yeah, so the Blake had 11 points in the second quarter, and I just want to point out that DJ Wilson played 3 minutes in the quarter because he was guarding Blake Griffin.
This is the fabled DJ Wilson is actually an elite defender take comes from this game. Mm-hmm. From like, I don't know, maybe 10 total possessions.
And Bucks fans, I would not say it came from this game because DJ got cooked in those 3 minutes.
Was it game four that happened?
No, I think it was earlier in the season because the reason that DJ was playing in this game, like in the second quarter when Blake was out there, is because during the regular season, Bud would put DJ on Blake and actually do a decent job as a defender. But that did not really work that well in this game.
Yeah, I like vaguely remember a regular season home game where DJ like frustrated the crap out of Blake on the block. Like earlier in the year, but that was the game. Mm-hmm. The one game that was like close, the game that came down to the Stanley Johnson 3-pointer, which is not a sentence I ever want to be saying.
Bucks killer Stanley Johnson.
Yeah. No, that's so funny that Bud broke the glass on DJ. Watching this, one thing I did notice, Bud did try some other stuff more often than I think I remember looking back in this series.
To be fair to Bud, it was a good chance to try some stuff.
Yeah, that's true. This wasn't exactly. I think we'll see later in this series, in this podcast series, as things tighten up, we see less of that. But yeah, there was some room for experimentation here, I think. I have one highlight that I wanted to talk about from this quarter. But Rohan, do you have any other second quarter stuff you want to get to?
No, I'm good.
Chris's fadeaway on Andre Drummond, kind of like fading out of bounds and back at the same time. It was an and one, and he swished the fadeaway. Just a beautiful play. Just... like, I know Chris was an all-star this year. He wasn't the guy he was in this season-ish, this last season, whatever. Back then, like, he wasn't as good as he was in this past regular season, in that playoffs or in that regular season, despite still being an all-star. But you can see glimpses of it. You can see times when he just decides he's going to make a shot. And he, looking back, I remember this was certainly my position then. It has not changed at all. It's only strengthened, but... man, I wish the Bucks just said, hey, do more of that stuff. You know, when you like dribble a few times and make a three right in somebody's face and you still shoot a pretty high percentage on those looks, maybe try doing that more than twice a game. Maybe that could help later on, but alas, what can you do?
Yeah, it was so frustrating, like watching this, like frustrating to see how diminished of a role that Middleton had compared to this season, like the 19-20 season. It's just like, why not do it then? But you know what, I think we should just appreciate that it happened eventually.
Yeah, so we moved. We
did end this quarter with the sequence that's going to keep Thonmaker in the league, where he blocked Giannis and then had a dunk.
Yeah, the Thonmaker experiences, remember that like sequence,
playoff Thon. Hashtag playoff Thon.
Playoff Thon. This is when he got bullied by Brooke too. So it's just like, that's the Thonmaker experience. I can't believe Thon requested a trade.
It's the funniest thing of all time. Not funny, but it is. I remember being gobsmacked. Yeah, it's pretty funny too. I just love that Thon, like every time he goes to a new team, he swindles that new team with another like 2-minute run. We're like, oh, hey, there's something there. And then the other 80 minutes, it's like, oh, yeah, I wish he could. Wish he was an NBA player.
He's still young. But he's still developing when he's like 40.
Okay.
No, I'm saying they're going to say that until he's 40.
Next year?
Yeah.
Yeah, backtrack harder, Rohan. No, man. Like, coaches love his energy. Coaches love the passion. And I hate the fact that he can't do anything skilled.
Except for, you know, these, like, out of his mind 80-second runs when he's like the best player in the world. But Oh, yeah, he's going to tantalize people for a while, I think. Somebody's going to buy in. I don't know if the Pistons are going to keep him. I know they like his energy and everything, but we'll see.
I would love to have him as, like, our version of DJ Wilson, where he just never plays. He's like, oh, hey, like, yeah, we got him, just in case.
Yeah. Break glass on Thon. You know, there, things are out of hand. Now, you guys can have the real thing probably next season. third quarter. The Pistons, this was my takeaway from this. Like, the Pistons could afford one quarter where they just let the Bucks hit a ton of shots and didn't play good enough defense while still scoring a decent amount. Like, the Pistons had a couple good offensive quarters. I mean, they scored 30, I think, in the second. But they gave up three in a row where the Bucks scored, I think, at least 30 points in the first three quarters, each of them. And, like, especially with Giannis not playing well, you just can't afford to give up more than one, maybe two quarters like that in a game. So, this quarter was really where the Bucks put this thing away. They have a 22-point lead heading into the final quarter. Chris had a lot of good shots. Sterling Brown hits a clutch three, which is so bittersweet to watch Sterling Brown do stuff well after him really getting kind of buried on the depth chart, not looking that good this season. But, man, my other note from this quarter, and I kind of just exhausted them all right away, so we'll see how much you guys have on this third quarter. But Blake's passing down low was really good. He was really opening up stuff for the other Pistons. And that just seems so necessary because one of my takeaways from the first two games, outside of Luke Kennard, it felt like 80% of Detroit's points were like absolutely garbage shots that went in. Like Andre Drummond is doing this weird like runner thing over Brook and it like hits the back of the backboard super hard but goes right in. Like Ish Smith is doing Ish Smith stuff. Like Langston Galloway is like hitting a fallaway jumper. Like it was just... they only were able to get hard looks, and that's not a way you can beat the Bucks. Blake gave them some easy looks, and that's obviously what they needed. They really missed that, but again, just not enough when they could not stop Milwaukee's offense.
Yeah, there was a little stretch in the middle of the third quarter where Eric Bledsoe, on two straight possessions, got two straight uncontested dunks.
Yeah, that's not good.
The first time is because Zaza set a screen on Reggie Jackson at the top of the key. and the second time is because Luke Kennard double-teamed Chris in the paint while Pat Connaughton had the ball. So they just left Bledsoe wide open. Like, he had the entire left side of the floor to himself. So that was two straight possessions. And that's, like, when you're doing stuff like that, it's kind of hard to win.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that actually brings me to what I was going to bring up from this quarter, was that, like, Zaza entered the game at, the 9:41 mark of the third quarter, and I think it was because Andre was in foul trouble. Not to say that, again, Andre did not have a great game in this game, but, like, if Zaza's playing, like, a six-minute stretch in the third quarter, like, that's probably a bad sign.
Do you know what our only Zaza thoughts were from this series, Les?
Don't have him injure Giannis.
Yep. Yep. Keep Zaza away from everyone who's important. Like, if Zaza's out there, put out, like, the last five guys on the depth chart. Like, those should be the DJ Wilson minutes. Get Tim Frazier some run. We did get Tim Frazier in this game, although less of Tim Frazier. Oh, Zaza.
You, to be fair, I was when this entire, like, discussion was happening, like, during the playoffs last season, I was thinking, like, Zaza must like these guys. He played with them for a while, you know? But it's also, yeah, like, does that matter?
He did set the screen for Bledsoe, so maybe he does.
Yeah, he did. No, he was just, like, he was somehow switched onto Eric Bledsoe, and then Reggie Jackson was trying to recover, and then Zaza just, like legit, like, it looks like he's setting a screen on him.
Yeah. Muscle memory.
Zaza was really good for, like, the first, like, 40 games, and then he, like, slowly... was like more and more of a mummy over the last like 40 games, and you could tell in the playoff series, like, he was not moving well.
It switched from nothing easy for the opponent to nothing easy for the team he's on.
Nothing easy for Zaza. It's always sad, like, I've seen it with a couple guys now, when you can just tell, like, especially a big guy, they lost it. Like, they just can't move fast enough to be an NBA player anymore. The Bucks' very brief run with Spencer Hawes, like, he made a couple threes, I think, but, like, we called him, God, what do we call him, like, old stone legs or something? He just couldn't move.
Oh, I do not remember that.
Like, if anybody tried to score, like, you could, like, you know how Giannis can, like, Eurostep around, like, even really good athletic guys? Like, literally anybody. You didn't even have to, you just, like, dribble around him, and Spencer Hawes was just like, well, I'm out of this play. It's you know, there's a fine line between being just athletic enough to be in the league and being like just a horrible, like, oh my god, this guy just does not have it. And it happens. It can happen fast, and I think we saw it happen to Zaza that season. Sad for Zaza, but at least he lost the step he needed to slide under people. As I mentioned earlier, in this podcast, in Binge the Bucks, the Pistons won at least one quarter in every game this series. So attentive listeners will know that Detroit had to win the fourth quarter because they didn't win any of the first three. So the Pistons do win this one 25-19. They only had a couple moments.
Unfortunately, they started the quarter down, what, 22?
Yeah, so, yeah. They did. So yeah, it was not enough to not win enough. The game, but they did win a quarter. And I feel like when you're the eighth seed, you know, hang your hat on that. We didn't lose four consecutive quarters in any game. Hang the banner. The Knicks probably would. Drummond padded those damn stats in this quarter. I just kept looking up and see Andre Drummond dunking while no one is around, or like Nikola Mirotic basically counts as no one. And I was like, damn, he only had like 12, 13 points in this game. Andre really, really beefed up the numbers in this quarter.
Played the whole quarter, got 6 points.
Pure garbage time. And like in the moment, I was remember thinking to myself, like, okay, like, yes, this was bad. Yes, we're still going to lose this game. But like, at least we got his confidence back in a decent place for game four. Not that that ended up mattering, but is, you know, Andre was just such, he's such a guy who like needs to have success in order for him to play well. And so it was like the garbage stuff was actually legitimately useful. It was very garbagey. Do not get me wrong. Like a couple putbacks, like a pick and roll dunk, which is like never happening unless Brook Lopez like doesn't want it to happen. And so it's just like, okay, at least his head's right.
This game, there was a sequence from kind of late-ish in this game. Pat Connaughton had the most insane layup, and it wasn't like insanely good. It was insanely like that shouldn't have worked. Like he just about gets his pocket picked at the top of the key, and then he's like dribbling, like barely has the handle. He goes up and like goes around somebody and just barely floats it in. And I was just like, you know, if Pat C's going to turn and make a play like that, I'd actually completely control the ball through an entire trip down the floor, which is pretty rare, and then actually make a tough layup like this, things are just going to go the Bucks' way. Like, that's, if Pat C is pulling off stuff like that, that's a tough sign for Detroit. So I think that kind of, in a way, kind of summed up a lot of the series. Just like, oh, okay, Pat C is going to show up, Sterling Brown's going to show up, even if Giannis is off. Like, if guys like that are going to play really well, good luck beating the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, Giannis, he had, what, 14 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, ends with a minus 7 in a game they win by 16. Like, that's so rough. Like, that, it was, like you had said earlier, it was his worst game of the postseason, like, by far.
Yeah, it was nice to see the rest of the team pick him up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Middleton, definitely. 20 points. Like, obviously, it was Middleton, Bledsoe, Brooke, and, yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah,
it was Ersan everyone.
Had 15, Pat had 11, George Hill had 11, Mirotic actually hit some shots for the first time in his life. Not salty at all. but yeah, it needed a collective team effort, and the team effort was there.
I didn't remember this until I was on the rewatch, but we talked a lot about how this was the closest game of the series, how the Pistons, you know, outscored the Bucks in the fourth quarter. Ish made a three as time expired, down 19. It's like, without that three, it's basically just another 20-point loss.
Ish Smith for the culture, baby.
It's like, feeling good. Ish made the three. All right, let's go into game. Oh, nope. Series is over. Sorry, guys.
Well, what's crazy is, like, I went into this thinking, and I was like, let's get Laz for game three. It's the big Blake return moment. And I thought it was going to be, like, the closest game of the series. Totally forgot Detroit actually did really well in the first half of game four. But the second half of game four, not so much. Containing Giannis, not so much. We will get to that in the next episode. But I am super glad we had you here for this, Laz. Quickly, let's do the series vibe. Like Rohan said, I think, at the very beginning, I don't know if anyone really expected this to be a real series, but you do kind of, you know, you got to take game three if you're down 0-2 to have a chance. I mean, we all love our 3-1 jokes, but 3-0 is like a whole different degree of difficulty. That is, of course, what happened here. I'm pretty sure we're all in agreement. Like, great to see Blake play well. The Pistons, especially early, you know, really gave it a run, really kept it close for a while. But I think we can stick a fork in this series after this game.
Oh, definitely. The Pistons were just a very limited team offensively. And that was really having only like a very few ways to attack the best defensive team in the league is like not a recipe for success in the postseason. And you saw them try to address a lot of that in the offseason as a direct result of this playoff series. You saw them try to add some shot making in Derrick Rose. You tried to see them add, you know, some length and athleticism in or more length than athleticism in like a Tony Snell and like a Markieff Morris. You saw them trying to, you know, add and replace the pieces that would have made this like a more competitive series this offseason the current regular season, and it just never coalesced.
Yeah,
which is ironic because that's exactly what happened the last time the Pistons made the playoffs.
No, you got to do what you got to do. Another note I had on this game specifically, Chauncey Billups, not great.
Like on the crew?
Yeah, on the call.
What happened with Chauncey on
the
call?
I don't know. I didn't like it.
See, no, I remember because Chauncey was ripping Dre during the game. And like, you know, I was there live. I wasn't, you know, listening to the call. But like that was the post game like radio story coming out of game three. It's like, look how much Dre sucks. It's like even Chauncey, Pistons legend, is talking about how much Dre sucks. Dre sucks. It's like not wrong. Again, not wrong. Just kind of being dicks about it for no reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was partly that, and it was partly just like he was trying to be like a homer. I mean, I get why, but he was being a homer while also ripping the team that he's trying to be a homer for. Like, it just didn't work in any sense.
Yeah. That is the state of Pistons analysis for the most part. It's like, I was like, I want this team to be good so badly, but God, they suck right in my eyes.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, listen, when you're the eighth seed, that's kind of what happens. You know, I think the overwhelming theme from this game, from the Pistons side, if like the optimist take, the non-Chauncey optimist take, Chauncey, is Blake came back and was good. And that's something. Like, that matters. And that's cool. And he wanted to play and everything else. From the Bucks side, it was just like, well, we weathered one of their best punches. You know, we got through the bad Giannis game. Let's move on. Let's finish this thing off. And we haven't talked about this at all, but that like the overarching theme for the Bucks off the court this series was, let's wrap up Detroit so we can get Malcolm Brogdon integrated and get healthy for the next series. So that the Bucks were able to take care of business and do that for sure.
There were times during this series where I like literally forgot that like they were missing a starting level player in Brogdon, and because they didn't need it. It didn't matter.
No, truly. But of course, the Pistons a bigger loss, Blake, for the first two games. But still definitely matters. So I think that's all I've got on this one. Unless, Laz, you have anything else? Rohan, we should be ready to take us home.
No. Laz, do you have anything?
Nah, man. Take it away.
Okay. Well, we would like to thank you for listening to this episode of Binge the Bucks. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and subscribe on your platform of choice, and tell your family and friends about the show if they need something to do during the social distancing period. Once again, make sure you check out Laz and the Pistons vs. Everybody pod and the rest of the podcast on the Blue Wire Network. And just make sure, please stay safe, everyone, and we will talk to you next time.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters, the more your network matters, the more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.